Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Earlier this year, Britain's top healthcare group issued surprising new recommendations for pregnancy and childbirth. The UK's National Institute for Health and Care Excellence concluded that it's safer for healthy women with uncomplicated pregnancies to give birth at home or in a midwife-led unit, rather than in a hospital under the supervision of an obstetrician.
As we said, it's surprising. Here in the U.S., the New England Journal of Medicine, one of the country's most prestigious medical journals, asked Dr. Neil Shah to write a response to the U.K.'s recommendations. Shah is an obstetrician at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, and after much thought, he wrote a carefully considered and researched commentary in the New England Journal that comes to this conclusion.
Shah wrote, "I have little doubt that the U.S. offers outstanding care for medically complicated pregnancies, but there are lessons to be learned from the British system. The majority of women with straightforward pregnancies may truly be better off in the United Kingdom."
Also surprising. Well, Dr. Neil Shah joins us in the studio now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So we should say you're an OB at Beth Israel. You're also founder of Costs of Care. It's a nationally recognized nonprofit that researches ways to provide better health care at lower costs. So obviously, this, you know, there's a lot to think about here. First of all, can you tell me what your reaction was when these recommendations came out of the UK?
Oh, yeah, sure. I thought they were crazy. So, you know, the recommendations came out in December. And I learned about it was the New York Times editorial response. You know, it wasn't an op-ed columnist. It was the editorial board responded, and they said, "Are midwives safer?" Kind of a provocative title than obstetricians. And I read it and remember thinking that I didn't really understand why the British would take that approach. And when the New England Journal invited me to respond, and originally I wasn't really sure I wanted to do it. You know, at that point, I was a year and a half out of residency. I kind of liked my job. It seemed like a really thorny issue. Mm-hmm. But the more I read about it, the more I realized that, and I actually started off planning on rebutting it and realized that most of my rebuttal hinged on really flaws in our system and not necessarily a British system.
Right. So, I mean, because basically what the UK, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence recommended, saying that, yeah, if you're healthy, you have a straightforward pregnancy, no complications, and you want to give birth at home, that should be fine. Or if you want to go with a midwife, that should be fine too. And there's the implication that that might be safer than hospital births. I think
Right. That's
the thing that really took people aback.
Not safe, safer. That was a lightning rod. And I think actually the easiest way to understand this, given that childbirth is such a deeply personal issue for people, is to start with what we all agree on, which is that most women that are giving birth are young and healthy. There's not a lot of controversy over that. And for those patients who are young and healthy, we over-intervene in childbirth more than is strictly necessary. Nobody argues with that. And we know that when we over-intervene, we make the patient experience less good, and we make care less affordable, and probably most importantly, in some ways, less safe. Not a lot of controversy over that either. The controversy kind of comes in when you start to think about why.
Right.
And more importantly, what we can do about it. And what the lightning bulb for me when I was thinking about the differences between the UK and the US was that in the UK, they were comparing four different models of delivering care. The ones that Anthony mentioned, giving birth at home, going to a birth center, having a midwife in the hospital, and so on. And in the U.S., we really only have one model. We give 99% of women give birth in hospital settings that look like intensive care units surrounded by surgeons.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, like, that kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. I mean, it's kind of clear why we overdo it.
Right. I mean, because you asked in the piece that you wrote for the New England Journal, does every birth need the equivalent, or does every baby need the equivalent of an ICU? And I mean, your answer seems to be no, but that is the model that we follow.
I think it's a question worth asking for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listeners, we're talking to Dr. Neil Shah. He's an obstetrician at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He's founder of Costs of Care. He's also an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. And he's written recently in the New England Journal of Medicine that perhaps we here in the United States should rethink the models for care when it comes to labor and delivery. So give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. to give us your perspective on this. Or you can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So, Dr. Shah, let's dig into the reasons why you came to the conclusion that you did, which, as you were saying earlier, you had originally intended to rebut the UK's recommendations. But, of course, as we quoted at the beginning of our conversation, I mean, you ended your piece by saying people may be better off, women may be better off in the UK. So what is it about how childbirth is handled for the vast majority of women in America, more specifically, led you to these conclusions? Because you had some astounding facts in your piece, such as, what was it, 5 out of 10 or 50% of medical complicated medical interventions are done around childbirth in the United States?
Well, yeah. Well, 5 of the 10 most common procedures performed in the United States are related to childbirth, and the most common operation performed on human beings, period, anywhere in the world is cesareans now.
And we're over 30%
in the United States. We're over 30%. So that's the thing. Like, you just take a step back, look at the big picture, and it's just, even as a surgeon myself, it's hard to believe that 1 out of every 3 human beings needs major surgery to be born. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. That's the downside. It's major surgery. And that's why, you know, there are a lot of reasons to not want major surgery. I think the most obvious one is that you could go home with a 12-centimeter incision and a newborn, or you could go home without a 12-centimeter incision and a newborn.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we operate, we get complications like organ injury, hemorrhage, infection. The biggest risk factor for infection after a childbirth is having had a C-section. All those things matter.
But you're an obstetrician, right? So certainly, I mean, you must have been in many situations where the C-section or some other form of intervention was absolutely necessary.
Oh, yeah. And that's right? What makes my job awesome. I mean, I get to be there during these profoundly joyful moments in people's lives. And I also get to think I'm saving lives. And often I am. That's my job. The thing about it is, though, as the person making the call, I have no way of knowing if I'm really right. And I know, in hindsight, obstetricians get it wrong 1 out of 2 times. So not a perfect batting average.
Okay, but what do you mean by that? That in the moment you have no way of knowing that you're right? Because, like, as a woman, I'm thinking, my doctor better know he or she is right.
Yeah, so I know on average how long labor should take. This is just an example. I don't know how long labor should take for the patient in front of me, though. And so it usually comes down to a game time decision. You know, I'm thinking, well, you know, is the baby too big? Is the pelvis too narrow? It's like, it's more art than science. And then you make the call, you do the C-section. It's one of the most satisfying procedures in all of medicine. There's a baby at the end. And if the baby is pink and squirming and looks great, you think, it's a good thing I did a C-section. And if the baby is blue and lackluster, you think, man, it's a really good thing I did a C-section. So either way, you're convinced you're right.
And there's no way of going back and testing what the outcome would have been had you made the other decision.
No. And that's part of the challenge. I mean, I think, you know, the obstetricians are all, you know, deeply devoted to their patients. We spend over a decade training and then some, you know, and we have access to the most sophisticated facilities in the world. But I think this is a case where it's not even about obstetricians overdoing it on purpose. I think it's the system around us that kind of, for a lot of different reasons, pressures us to take what we feel is the lowest risk path. But, you know, when you take the big picture, actually causes a lot of insidious harm that we don't immediately see.
So, I mean, some of those pressures being pressures of possible litigation, right? Patient demand, even?
So here's the thing. So C-sections have become 500% more common since the 1970s. Childbirth has not become 500% more risky. And nobody really knows why it's become that much more common. So people think maybe it's medical malpractice. And if there, you know, if we had tort reform, I'm sure C-sections would be less common. But it's not what's driving the growth, because malpractice has existed for a long time, even as C-section rates have doubled and tripled and quadrupled. Mm-hmm. Patients, less than 0.5% of patients request C-sections on demand, despite what you read in the media. So it's not that either. You know, moms are getting older. There's more obesity. There's more diabetes and hypertension. But even though C-sections are more common in that population, they're equally more common in young, healthy teenagers.
Right.
So there's something else going on.
You know, there are people who would argue that the thing that's going on at the basis of all of this is that we have arrived in a place in the United States where birth is considered a non-natural medical event, right? That requires high level of testing and intervention, that our whole paradigm for labor and delivery is kind of wrong now. I mean, and that may be what the UK recommendations are trying to get at, to sort of reset and reframe how we look at what is a typical, quote-unquote, average, because there's no such thing as an average birth, I know, but like an average pregnancy and childbirth experience?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think there's definitely some truth to that. You know, I wouldn't recommend going out into the woods and having a baby. You know, there are a lot of natural things that are truly risky. But the question is, you know, how do we minimize risk? And sometimes, you know, no woman would go into a hospital, you know, spend hours, if not days, underneath fluorescent lighting on a hospital bed covered in ultrasound goop, clips, wires, and alarms, unless they thought it was the safer thing to do. And in many cases, when we look at the data, it doesn't support that.
Have you had response from your colleagues in the world of obstetrics, of people saying, okay, yes, I mean, we see the evidence base that you're quoting, but on the other hand, there's just this fundamental discomfort with this idea that hospitals may not be the best place for most women because, you know, it wasn't that long ago that death in childbirth was one of the leading causes of death for women, and it still is in certain places around the world. Why would we want to do anything to sort of remove women from that medical infrastructure that could sort of that could lead us back down that path?
Right, and we do not want to do that. So there's definitely been a response, and I think that for a lot of my colleagues especially, it's just as viscerally emotional, this issue, as it is for a lot of women, because when women choose to give birth outside of the hospital and we see it, it's usually in situations that have gone terribly wrong. So I think that there's something to it, and there's no question that on balance, hospitals and surgery have made women and babies safer. The question is, does it make everybody safer? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some patients for whom it actually makes them significantly less safe. We just don't have the optics to know it in the moment.
Right.
So we do the C-section. And actually, you know, the biggest consequence of C-sections is that it can cause a condition called placenta accreta, where the placenta gets stuck, doesn't detach, and women hemorrhage. It's caused by C-sections. We know this. And just as C-sections have become 500% more common, placenta accreta has become 12 times more common. But it happens 6 years after we choose to do the C-section, so we don't see it.
Wow. Well, I don't want to lose focus on the fact that this conversation and your commentary in the New England Journal of Medicine was triggered by the fact that in the UK now they are recommending that women who choose to have home births or midwife-led care should be able to have that option, and quite easily, because you point out in the piece that what's really one of the key differences between Britain and the United States is that, as you write, the way this possibility for these options is presented and managed. That's the key difference. And what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that, you know, we're much more concerned about under-intervention. In the UK, it seems that they're much more concerned about over-intervention. And the reason that the risks of over-intervention seem more stark in the UK is because access to care isn't a problem there. Here, it looks very, very different. So if you look outside of Boston, 50% of U.S. counties don't have a qualified healthcare provider to deliver babies.
Half of the counties in America.
Yeah, and what that means is no obstetrician, no midwife, no family practice doc that can deliver babies.
And so where do these women go?
They drive. So I've been to parts of the country in South Dakota and elsewhere where women routinely drive 2 to 3 hours to get to a facility that delivers babies. And when they show up, it's a very sophisticated facility. It's one that provides intensive care. And what I mean by that is there's one-to-one nursing, there's heart rate monitors, there's medications get titrated minute by minute. Everything that you'd find in a cardiac ICU, you'll find on a labor floor. And in some ways, we're kind of combining the problems of the first world and the third world into a perfect storm. You know, we've got the access issues of third world countries in the United States in 2015. But then when you show up, we deliver incredibly intense care in ways that are sometimes harmful.
Mm. Well, listeners, I'm speaking with Dr. Neil Shaw. He's an obstetrician at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He's founder of Costs of Care and an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. He wrote a recent commentary in the New England Journal of Medicine that responds to recommended changes in the United Kingdom regarding midwife-led deliveries, home births, and a general sort of change in how the UK is looking at women's options when it comes to labor and delivery. And Dr. Shaw says maybe we ought to have that same conversation here in the United States. There's a lot more to talk about specifically about what goes on in the UK, Dr. Shaw, but we've actually got several listeners who'd love to give us their perspective here. So let's go to them. Steve is calling from Needham. You're on the air, Steve.
Hi, Hi, thanks for taking my call. My experience has been that our first birth, my wife and I had our first child while we were actually overseas. And let me tell you, cesareans do save lives because she had preeclampsia, and neither she nor the baby would be alive and healthy today if it weren't for the existence of the C-section. So the problem is that in the subsequent two pregnancies and births that we've had, the obstetrical practices that we approached for care treated us as if they were just going to do a routine repeat C-section. Because you were talking about the C-section rates, how they're too high in America. Well, we needed to look into this and found that the World Health Organization recommends a C-section rate of no higher than 15%, but in America it hovers in the mid to high 30s, depending on what state you're in, and Massachusetts is no exception. We couldn't find a provider who would work with us to try to guarantee an intervention-free birth.
So what did you do, Steve?
Well, it's not the practices so much as the hospitals, and you have to go to a hospital unless you give birth at home. We ended up paying private midwives to have the babies at home. We did have the babies at home. It was safe. It was beautiful. It was wonderful, but it was also very, very expensive.
Right. Steve, thank you so much for your call and for sharing that story, because it gets us right back to one of the key differences between the U.S. and the U.K., because Steve was talking about how he and his wife had to hire a private midwife to come in, and it was expensive, whereas that isn't necessarily at all how it would work in the U.K.
Oh, no, it looks very different there. In fact, I started as somebody who couldn't even imagine a home birth in my personal life, to thinking that it could even be preferable. Because what they do is they send you a qualified midwife to come to your home.
This is like a certified nurse midwife.
Exactly. Yep. That comes to your home and provides one-on-one care, which, you know, even if you go to the hospital and have a midwife, usually your midwife has other patients they're also caring for. But to get that level of attention. And then, you know, if there's a concern, there are clear protocols for when to transfer you to the hospital, and the hospital expects you. The U.S. is entirely different. You know, Steve was able to find a private midwife to come to his home. Most people are not able to do that or afford it. Once you start your home birth, if something goes wrong, usually you call 911 at the 11th hour. And 911 is not the optimal system for getting childbirth care. You know, so ambulance comes crashing into your driveway. They're like, where do you want to go? Of course, you're like, I don't know. Then they bring you somewhere. They don't know who you are. They say, who are you?
Right.
That's really not the way you want to do it.
No. So there's a continuum of care.
Exactly.
In the United Kingdom. But, I mean, I should note that you also point out in your piece, and, you know, we spoke with people in preparing for this conversation, that these are relatively new recommendations, and the vast majority of women in the UK as of today still have their babies in hospitals there.
They do. So about 90% of babies in the UK are born in hospitals. Although I'll say the model there, even for babies born in hospitals, is that midwives provide the first level of care and the obstetricians are there for complexity, even if you're in the hospital. But here it's more like 99 out of 100. So there's still a big difference.
So how do we change that, though? If in the UK, from what you're describing, it seems as if obstetricians are viewed upon as highly trained specialists who should be called on in the event of specialty care when it's needed. And you know, midwives provide more of the primary care. It feels like we don't have that framework here in the United States, that when it comes to when a woman gets pregnant, her first thought is, I need to go see an obstetrician to provide what's essentially primary care during a pregnancy.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a few different things that we could do to move forward. There are a lot of strategies, and like I said in the piece, I think there are lessons in the UK, but I think our model will obviously need to look different from the UK. But one of the things that I think we should start to think about is healthcare systems in 2015 in the United States are starting to take responsibility for populations and trying to think about not just, you know, the surgery, but your healthcare overall. And 25% of all hospitalizations are childbirth related. It's the number one reason to come into the hospital. So it seems like this should be a big piece of the pie. And I think as big health systems start to take ownership over the health of the people that they serve, there's an opportunity to kind of reinvent and re-engineer the way we approach it.
Let's take a couple more calls. Emily is calling from Westford. You're on the air, Emily.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and I'm thrilled that Dr. Shaw is young and freshly out of medical school and doing what he's doing. My experience was very different. I was 30 and 34 when I had my two children, and I worked with midwives both times in the Boston area. The first was Beth Israel's ambulatory care unit, BIAC, and the two midwives there were ex-nuns, and they were both at the birth. And the obstetrician actually took pictures. He had nothing to do with the birth, which was great. And then the next one, 4 years later, was in Beverly at the North Shore Birth Center, which was a house setting across the driveway from the hospital. So both of them were under the umbrellas of the hospital. Now, I have to say, this was in 1979 and 1983, but I was starting at a OBGYN practice, and a friend of mine said, you know, the OBs look for the abnormal. When you go to a midwife, they're looking for the normal. And I felt that was so true, because all my appointments with my husband with me were an hour and a half at the midwife.
Right. Emily, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Shah, I wonder, what do you see as the obstacles to creating more of the kind of model that Emily was talking about, maybe midwifery-led but hospital-linked or hospital-based or, you know, across the street, some sort of relationship so there is that continuity of care we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest obstacle is money, but I think actually understanding what that means in detail provides an opportunity for a solution. So what I mean by that is that labor floors typically for a hospital are loss leaders. You know, it's the cardiac ICU is a cash cow. Labor floor is a loss leader. It's very resource intensive, but they lose money. And so they
really
tend to be. Oh, yeah.
Because I saw a report in the New York Times that said the cumulative cost for 4 million annual births in the United States is $50 billion.
Oh, no, we spend a lot of money on it. Don't get me wrong. But the cost to reimbursement ratio compared to other parts of the hospital, like cancer care or cardiac care, because at the end of the day, we're taking care of healthy people. And we end up staffing healthy people with, you know, one-to-one nurse the whole time. It ends up being, like, quite expensive. And so I think, you know, in the traditional model of paying hospitals, childbirth ends up being an afterthought. And I think we're at the precipice of a pretty radical shift in the way we pay for care in this country. And I think that's actually going to help a lot. That's one thing.
Well, so let me, but this is sort of, you're shining a light on what I think feel like is the giant elephant in the room, is that when we talk about comparing the United States and the UK, there is a system of national health care in the UK. No such thing here.
No such thing here, but we're getting incrementally towards a system where we can make sure that we're rewarding hospitals and doctors for providing value and not just volume, which means, like, right now there are incredible throughput pressures on labor floors, and childbirth is a great way of expediting, you know, labor, right? And I think if we had ways of alleviating some of that throughput pressure, we would see less C-sections.
Can we decipher what you just said? Tell me if I'm interpreting this right.
Yeah.
Throughput pressure means getting people through the system as fast as possible.
Yeah, like, you know, the
expediting labor means getting that baby out.
Right. Like,
so
a
if a woman's taking a long time to give birth, there's a lot of pressure to speed it up.
In low-risk women, this is like in the data, in low-risk women, the number one reason to do a C-section in someone who's started in labor is something that we call failure to progress. It's a very subjective call. And one way of interpreting that is you're taking too long. And I don't think that, you know, even OBs are consciously doing that. But when you look at, you know, if you're busting at the seams, if you've got no labor rooms left, and that's often what these, you know, areas look like, there are pressures.
And so how do we overcome those pressures, though? I mean, I know it's a huge and complicated system.
No, this is what's going to make it different in 2015. So, you know, we've tried payment reform in healthcare a lot. And, you know, you mentioned that I started this nonprofit, Costs of Care, that has looked at this. And that's part of it. But what's really different in 2015 compared to, say, 1994, when we tried to reform healthcare, is that in 94 you were getting AOL CDs mailed to you. And in 2015, the internet looks different.
Right.
Yeah. And I think because of some of the work that Martha Biebinger is doing and other folks, you know, the demographic that is online looking for transparent quality and price information is our demographic. It's young, healthy women. And increasingly, you know, there's billions of dollars in the Silicon Valley to make a Yelp for healthcare. And I think that's going to be the game changer.
Well, let's take another call here. Dave is calling from Bridgewater. You're on the air, Dave.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What's your story?
Well, my wife gave birth to our first child, a son, in December at Beth Israel. And we were very happy with the care there. And there were some minor complications. It was a long labor. And when he actually came out, we had about 12 people in the room, including the NICU team, because he came out sunny side up and there were some other concerns. And I just want to say these conversations about, you know, medical waste and whether it's in the context of frivolous testing or unnecessary hospitalization, it's always interesting in the hypothetical. But when you're in the moment and it's your wife and it's your child, you know, I want to be there where all the professionals, I don't want to be at home when there's an emergency during birth.
Dave, thank you so much for your call and for your perspective, because I think that returns us back to what the sort of the central tension is here, that we are, and especially in a place like Greater Boston, fortunate to have 21st century medical care available. And it's hard to have this conversation in the United States about, you know, are there other options, without thinking that any difference is actually a diminishment in access to that care.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a challenge. And Dave, thank you for your comments. And I really sympathize with that. And I'm glad you got good care at Beth Israel Deaconess. And it's likely that maybe you needed 12 people in the room. And I'm glad that you got it. And, you know, part of our challenge, too, is that we don't always know when an emergency is going to happen. So you can start off with a low-risk woman, and then something unanticipated can happen. And that might have happened with Dave's wife. And, you know, that's part of what we have to consider. What I found with this is that the debate and the reaction to the New England Journal piece feels a lot like the treatment intensity at the end of life debate. They're almost identical in terms of the concerns and the worries about trying to decrease unnecessary care and try to understand the harms. The only big difference is that we've thrown reproductive politics into the mix.
Right. You know, and actually, you make an interesting point in the piece, which I think is once again just a good motivation to think about reframing, because you point out that 45% of British first-time mothers who intend to give birth at home, so they start laboring at home, this is in the UK, they ultimately get transferred to a hospital. And some people look upon that as a failure of home births, but you had a different interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, I read that and I was like, what are they doing? You know, because I was imagining 45% of women in the US, like with the ambulance crashing into your driveway. And then when I read the guidance and I understood better how things work there, I realized that's actually a signal of a very well-working, highly coordinated healthcare system. So it's only for first-time moms, so that it happens that frequently. And so, you know, maybe if you've had babies before, that actually makes you an even better candidate for this. But for first-time moms that really value wanting to have a baby at home, you know, they're being careful.
And then it's easy for them to go to the hospital.
Right. They expect you. The hospital's close by. That's another difference, honestly. I mean, I think one of the challenges that we have here in the U.S. is that we are just a bigger country.
Well, Dr. Neil Shah is an obstetrician at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He's assistant professor at Harvard Medical School and founder of Costs of Care. We have a link to his commentary that appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine. That's at radioboston.org. Dr. Shah, thank you so much for coming in and for getting this conversation going with us. And honestly, we hope you come back, because it's a really important issue. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Meghna.
Well, listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.